Welcome to our Saturday simulcast. I'm Dean Hart. Joins me. I want to thank the Union Club Hotel. The Boiler Up Bar was there yesterday visiting with a good friend, having a brief revisit of Purdue's Final Four, and that was fun to do, and a great spot to spend time on a sunny afternoon on campus. Tom knows the Leaps Coffee there, and it's a good spot just at the Union. You and I have been kind of running over the Union over the years. We used to go over there and mess around in the sweet shop. It's a new place. It's a great spot, Tom, to say the least, but we appreciate the Union Club Hotel. Okay, Tom, spring practice after yesterday's fishing expedition literally has come to an end, and Ryan Walters has completed spring practice. I got to ask you about the fishing just because I thought that was – interesting way to end it, probably a good way to end it with all the things that are going on. I don't know what details you knew about it, but how it worked out. I saw you posted a picture on Twitter of one of the guys catching one of the large fish. But was that a last minute change, or what? How did that get brought to your attention? This was going to go on.
Yeah, Musa had a nice fish, didn't he?
Yeah, that was a nice looking Musa. It's a big old fish.
I'm not an angler, so I'm guessing that was a bass.
Yeah.
I'm afraid to say my outdoorsman days were very limited, Alan. But
mine too.
I did not. They didn't want word to get out.
Yeah.
About this expedition, I guess. You know,
they take the whole team.
Yeah, as far as I know, yeah. I don't know.
Wow, would take man, the whole be a team, lot of fishing poles to get.
Yes, it is. Pocket fishermen, right?
Yeah, okay. No doubt.
Bronco. But Monday we found out they weren't going to practice on Thursday. Or first of all, no, there was the fact that we weren't going to be allowed to go to practice at all on Thursday. I said, wow, what's up with that, you know? So this has probably been in the works for a few weeks, I'm guessing. And, you know, I didn't know about it until Thursday, that day of what happened. I was texting with some people and found out they're fishing. And, so, you know, a nice way to end the spring, right, Alan? Your spring game was behind you. Practice 14 times overall, including your game, and just a nice way to have some fellowship and camaraderie away from the field, away from the complex, Alan. I think, you know, anybody who works in an office can speak to that. Sometimes it's nice to get away and
have some fun,
right? And get to know each other a little bit better in a different environment. So I'm guessing there was some of that involved too. So here we go, Alan. Now the long off-season march up until camp in August begins, right?
Yeah.
And there's a lot still moving for Purdue football, for football everywhere, of course. You know, staff is going to hit the road recruiting here April 29th. Probably going to hit some combines across the state and locally. And then June, Alan, that's your big camp month, right?
Yeah.
Purdue's going to have four camps, and they're going to have a lot of official visitors too, Alan, throughout the month of June. I've chronicled those OVs and boiling over the last couple of weeks. So 20, 30 guys have already announced officially. So here we go. And July is a kind of a quiet month. Big Ten Media Day will probably be at the end of July, Al, and then we're off and away, right? So it'll all be here before we know it, though.
August 31st, that opener against the Sycamores of Indiana State, then a bye week, and then was it Notre Dame, right? Comes in week two on the 14th of September, right? So that
correct me if I'm wrong, Notre Dame – it's not been a West Lafayette since 2013. Is that right?
That is correct. Daryl Hazel, the first year of Coach Daryl Hazel, Akeem Hunt got him off to a good start in that game. And then it kind of didn't go completely sideways, but Notre Dame was able to win that game relatively easily. Hard to imagine. You and I grew up with all those year to year. It was for Notre Dame. It was the event of the, you know, every other year when the Fighting Irish came to West Lafayette. Well, whether Ryan Walters likes it or not, he's going to see the Fighting Irish, I believe, from what, the next 5 years. So unless
changes. I'll be honest with you, I took that for granted all those years playing Notre Dame. I didn't realize. I mean, nobody likes Notre Dame, right? But it's pretty cool playing Notre Dame, and there are schools that would give anything to get one shot at Notre Dame. And Purdue was able to play them every year and be on a national stage, Alan, as you know, in that game. And to get that opportunity, Notre Dame had nothing to gain by playing Purdue typically, right? Purdue had a lot to gain. And pretty cool. It was sad to see that go away. But now, Al, not to get off on a tangent, but my goodness, with an 18-team Big Ten, nine conference games, Purdue can't really afford to be scheduling a lot of rigorous non-conference games if it wants to at least get to 6 wins and bowl eligibility every year.
It was at 1946 through 2014, I believe it was. Last game was played, obviously, at Lucas Oil between the Fighting Irish and Purdue. The last game of the series. Of course, the teams played, what, 2021
South Bend.
up in South Bend with the Notre Dame coming out on top in that one. All right, we have so spring ball comes to an end. We had the spring game. You had, of course, your last practice that you were able to do your deep dive on Tuesday. But just and you've given written overall your impressions. I'll give you another and talk about just kind of now with a few days removed. What are the key storylines that your key takeaways you think from spring ball and that spring game?
I think the two positions that are most intriguing are both on the offensive side of the ball, the line and the receiving core.
Right.
No two positions received a greater influx of portal help than those two spots, Alan, especially the line. Four portal additions were added, and two college players were added too. That's six veteran players added up front. So, without a doubt, depth has been improved up front. And it really got tested last year because of injury. And they've gotten a lot bigger too, Alan. And the hope is, of course, that they get better then when it comes to pushing the pile on third and one, on fourth and two, in the red zone. Purdue has really always struggled, as we know, to get that one or two tough yards when it needs to. And obviously, a bigger line you'd think would help Purdue's cause on that front. And then I can tell you what the two names to watch up front. I don't want to bury people with names, Alan.
Yeah.
After all, it becomes a sea of names that you don't remember anyway. But the two portal guys, one's going to probably start at left tackle, a kid named Corey Stewart from Ball State, maybe the most important position on the line, Alan. And then I think you're going to see a kid named DJ Wingfield from New Mexico start at right guard. Now, the receiving core, Alan, three portal additions. Also, maybe the best receiver of all, Allen, was a portal addition last year who got hurt and missed all year. Of course, Jamal Edgerrin from Florida Atlantic. They were cautious with him this spring, didn't want to take any risk of getting him hurt. So you have, he's almost really a newcomer too, for all intents and purposes, Allen. So you have Jamal Edgerrin, three portal guys this year, two from Georgia, one from UCLA. The name to know is Corey Smith. Of Georgia, a blazer, Olympic caliber speed, they say, probably going to start. So that's the kind of guy that can take the top off of defense. So those are two storylines. I think defensively, Allen, the rush in spot, you saw Nick Skorton leave for Texas A&M. They moved Kydren Jenkins to inside linebacker. Who's going to rush the passer this year? Those were the two of the best pass rushers in the Big Ten last year. I think all eyes are on Will Helt, who you and I saw have a pick six in the spring game. He has a chance to be special, I think. And then they've added some portal help there, two or three players. And I think the guy who's going to start is a kid from Georgia named CJ Madden. But they also have a kid from Franklin College in Indiana, D3 kid, Jairo Jada. And a Boston College kid who we have a story on the site right now about him, Rashida Salehe. So yeah, that's as you know, defenses and like for any team, you got to be good up front. You got to get after the quarterback, and it's going to be important for these new rush-ins to get upfield and to get pressure on quarterbacks this year.
Purdue did statistically last year one of the worst in the Big Ten, and that's not what Ryan Walters wants to be. We know that that was his MO coming in with a special group that he had at the University of Illinois, especially in the secondary. Do you sense the coach, he's obviously got a lot of things to focus on, but it seems to me that defense is going to have to be serviceable enough. You've got some pieces on the offensive end to be pretty productive with Hudson Card, the quarterback, and a guy that you have to assume is going to make a pretty good size jump, though he did very well toward the end of last season, especially dealing with injuries, et cetera. But is that a fair assessment that defense has really got to, you know, he's got to come to the fore and be able to slow people down enough if Purdue's going to, you know, have a chance to win even half of its games this year?
Yeah, I think that's an accurate assessment. I think the offense looks to be in pretty good shape,
Yeah.
as long as the line is as improved as a lot of people think. I think they have enough wide receiver to make that work out. We didn't talk about tight end, or maybe the most talented spot on the offense with Max Clair and George Byrne. Nice running backs, good 1-2 punch, McAbee and Love. I think Hudson Card's going to be among the top 25% of the quarterbacks in the Big Ten. And that leaves it on the defense, probably, right,
Yeah.
Alan? If you look at the statistics from last year, Purdue was last in the Big Ten in points allowed, over 30 points a game. They were 12th among 14 schools in total yards allowed per game. They were 12th in the Big Ten and most plays of 10 yards or more allowed. So a lot of times it was feast or famine for Purdue. They either got a negative play or they gave up a big play. We heard the if you rewatch the spring game, the announcers, Jake Butt in particular, talked about that a lot too. The defense has to tighten things up, be more consistent. The back end, I think they've gotten better at cornerback. They've had a
Yeah.
lot of talent now. And I think maybe the best portal addition of all is a cornerback, Nylon Green from Georgia. He looks like a pro, Al, and we'll see if he plays like a pro. He did a little bit at Georgia earlier in his career. He's going to start, obviously. Markievicz Brown. They got nice depth. They got size. They look good back there, Alan. And there's
Yeah.
Dylan Payne, right? Everybody's All-American. Probably only going to play 3 years. Who knows? Maybe he's a first-round pick in a couple of years. I don't want to get way ahead of myself here, but he's a special player. But again, you can be as good as you want in the back end, Alan. You got to be good up front. And both sides of the ball. You can only cover for so long. You got to get some heat, and that line's going to have to get heat, and they're going to have to be stout against the run. They've got some depth up front, Alan, but I think that's the area on that defense, that D line, that probably has the most to prove, or maybe holds the key of the whole season.
You know, in what was it? I don't know if it ended up being exactly a 27 point new players this spring or what total in total that fishing expedition and that building of clump camaraderie and getting a sense of togetherness is a huge deal with that. And I know it's hard to have that sense even in your shoes of knowing what got accomplished there, but that's a big part of what Ryan Walters and staff have to accomplish is, you know, we got to get this group all thinking the same way. Any sense of that, or is that an unfair question just based on how much time you get to spend with these guys? But how do you have a sense of how that's going?
Yeah, we're very limited in what we can
Yeah.
see, but everybody says the right things, and
Yeah.
there seems to be the way the coaches talk, a good vibe, if you will, to sound like one of the hip kids, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems like there's some camaraderie, and everybody seems to get along well. Anytime you got it close to 100 guys, though, Alan,
Yeah.
you're gonna have cliques. You're going to have some guys that don't like each other. It's just human nature. But it seems like overall, I've got no reason to think there's any, bad blood or non-harmonious relationships to a great extent on this roster. But who knows for sure, right? And yeah, your number of 27 mid-year arrivals is correct. 14 portal, two junior college guys, and 11 freshmen got here early. Now, come May, Alan, we're going to see the rest of the freshmen show up. There's also going to be a junior college wide receiver show up, a guy named Leland Smith, a 6'5 kid who they think can help. And Alan, honestly, the two best members of this 24 recruiting class will get here then. Coy Beasley, a safety, and Luke Williams, another safety. Coy Beasley may be the best of them all, Alan. So those guys get up to speed quickly, that you got to think they're going to have a good chance to get on the field. Coy Beasley, for sure. Keep his name on your radar, Alan. A super fast player, not the biggest guy. Safety, and also in the return game, I think he has a chance to help. And who knows, Alan? Early on, they were thinking about maybe trying to sprinkle him on offense a little bit. So, again, I'm really eager to see what those two guys look like and get a look at those guys in pads come August for sure.
You've talked and written about transfer portal, the current opening, and of course, Purdue's had a couple kids that we're aware of that are in they're in the portal, that you would expect that Purdue will have a handful of additions, maybe. Certainly punter, long snapper are ones you talked about, but that process is going to go on here for a little bit of time. Any indications, at least of this recording, of anything that's about to pop, or is it, and there's a lot of spring games still going on too. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
It's a lot of teams that still have games to be played, and you would think guys will jump in the portal after their spring games. But is that the way you look at it here down the road?
Yeah, you think the portal's open for 15 days in April from the 16th to the 30th. It opened on Tuesday. And you're right, Alan. Two Boilermakers jumped in pretty quickly. Ethan Cole, a safety, and a running back, Christian Womack, both redshirt freshmen, Alan, both not a surprise to see going to the portal. By my count, and I've got a scholarship chart that I have pinned to our message board. I'm probably going to repost it again, just put it on the front page at some point. By my count, I think it's pretty accurate. They're at 83 scholarships. So they want to add four or five guys, Alan. You do the math, that means some guys are going to have to get off the boat here. And I think that's going to happen probably next week. It's going to happen next week because that's the last week, right? And you're close to it. And I'm told they're going to start having exit interviews next week as well, where they're going to meet one-on-one with each player. So, you know what exit interviews are like. Hey, here's
They
what we
may have
see.
some. They may have some
Sure.
that
Yeah,
exit.
so I think if people are really hardcore Purdue fans like me, you probably can kind of make some guesses of guys who may go into the portal here. But the hope is, and Ryan Walters always says this, you have no surprises, right? They just got to take everybody's word for it that they're going to come back. So, but I don't think they expect any surprises at this point. But again, some more guys, look for a handful of more guys to jump in here. And you talked about the shopping list, punter, long snapper. I think they would like to get a rush end if they could. I think they would like to get a player called a star, a cornerback safety, sort of like a nickelback. They'd like to get another one of those in here as well. They'd like to get another defensive lineman too, I know for sure. The guy who plays next to nose tackle, the end, or you want to call him a tackle. So those are the spots probably. Star, D-line, rush end, long snapper, punter, I think, are the slots to watch. Maybe a tight end too, Alan. I think they could find a big tight end who could be almost like a de facto third offensive tackle to help in blocking situations. They would take him as well because their tight ends are more athletes right now. Those guys that are 6'5", 230-pound guys who can run. So those are the spots I think they're looking for. Pretty sure, Alan, the punter, there's a punter visiting here right now this weekend, kid from Mississippi State. And that's a guy to keep an eye on for. He's an Australian kid who punted 1 year in Starkville. I think Purdue has a good shot to get him. Otherwise, they're kicking tires. It's very competitive out there, Alan. At this point, you're just kind of fine-tuning your roster. And as you know, there's scarcity at this point. Everybody's looking for stuff and things get overvalued, and it's very competitive to get the good players. So it's always an uphill battle to fill your roster out, but Purdue's going to do what it can to try to address a few areas that it thinks it needs to be addressed here.
Yeah, and it's going to be that's the way of the world. I did want to ask you about a little bit of news that came out. I think it was yesterday, being Thursday, I should say, regarding this wonderful world of NIL collectives and what may be coming. And we're guessing like everybody else, but maybe a potential move in-house down the road. Now, of course, the Boilermaker Alliance, and we do some work with them, and Dave Neff and Maddie Daddario in the group, and they're working hard to keep this all moving in a forward direction if you're a Purdue fan. But what's anything on your crystal ball there, or is that just more discussion about,
Yeah.
where this is all going to land? I guess if any of us could figure that out, we'd be on every talk show in the country. So what do you think?
Yeah. See, they want to get this stuff buttoned up because I guess there's a bunch of lawsuits for Allen that are pending right now.
Correct.
That could cost billions of dollars. These schools billions of dollars in back NIL payments. So they want to try to get some blueprint and system in place here to maybe make those go away. You know, we saw the state of Virginia recently pass legislation where they're going to allow their schools to pay NIL directly from their athletic departments. A lot of people think, Alan, and we talked about this earlier off camera, that these NIL collectives could just be moved in-house. Maybe they hire the people, they hire their own people. But anyway, they're not separate entities, so to speak, that schools can pay out their own NIL through their own school. And but at that point, too, Alan, I think you're going to maybe have these players earn some type of compensation beyond NIL. Are they do they become employees, full-fledged
Right.
employees with benefits, workman's comp, and all that? Can they somehow collectively bargain as a unit if they're not employees? I'm the wrong guy to ask, Alan, as far as all the legal law matters and employee law matters, but that the ideal thing would be if for some way they can provide structure between the universities and the college football players, they can collectively bargain in some way, shape, or form to come up with contracts, salary caps, just to provide some type of structure to what has been a totally chaotic system. I think that's the goal of everybody here. Now, it's great if you're a player right now, Alan. If you're a
Yeah.
player, you do not want this system to change. It is
Yeah.
all great for players, right? But it's still so chaotic to try to build programs for these coaches. I don't feel sorry for guys making $5 million a year.
Yeah.
I'll give me $5 million, y'all. I'll try
I'll work
to.
with it.
But anyway, I just think it would probably behoove everybody if there was more structure to it. Again, how that looks out, I don't know. If they want these guys to be full-time employees, you know more than me. What being an employee and what the ramifications are of that for a university and for an employee. Can you collectively bargain if you don't have a union, if you aren't employees? I don't know. I think there's ways you can do that. But to get back to your point about collectives, it looks like there's a good chance you could see in the future those just moving in-house. And honestly, Alan, if players are already going to be compensated as employees of some sort, do you still need an NIL arm? I think, I guess maybe you do if you want to help guys, you know, not just
Above
guys.
and beyond.
Yeah, guys going to get paid for playing football. Now, how do you want to get paid for endorsing the local restaurant or whatever? That's where your collective could still help, I guess. So, and right now, you know, maybe that's the way they go, but there are a lot of balls in the air right now, Alan. I mean, you could talk about this for days, how this is going to impact other sports. Where are universities going to get this money, Alan? Football makes gobs of cash, but football also supports the entire athletic department. If they're suddenly having to pay out a $10 million payroll, hey, the women's swim team, where's their money going to come from? Where's the golf team's money going to come from? I mean, then all that, what's going to happen to Title IX? I don't know. My head starts to spin when I think about
It does.
patience, but it's going to be really fun just to watch. To see how this all unfolds as that college landscape continues to change before our very eyes.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. Just keep it fun, keep it light, keep a very serious topic light, I guess, because we're not the ones that are going to be making the decisions, and we're going to have to react. We, even in our role, with dealing with it, whatever comes our way, you're still going to hopefully have guys interviewed and games to play and analysis of what you're seeing on the field with the guys that are on the field. So it'll never be a dull moment, I don't think, from now till probably the next several years as this continues to unfold in one form or another. All right, Tom, thanks so much as always. Appreciate all your excellent work on spring ball. You'll have a lot over the summer here as we get ready for 2024, position evaluations, et cetera, recruiting. Keep an eye on that. That will be fun too. We've got Steve Wilfong also that's joined us at On3, which I think is going to be a big help to some of our coverage too. We'll look forward to that. So we will take a, I don't know if we're going to take a short break. We're going to make a short transition and transition to a little baseball and to somebody that we know and like very much. Both of us do, Kyle Charters. The voice, that golden voice of Purdue baseball. The Boilermakers are off to a very good start and looking like a Big Ten playoff team. We'll hit that and little baseball 101 with Purdue here in the next segment. So we'll be back. We will be back shortly. You're going to transition. Next thing you'll hear is me talking to Kyle Charters and a little Purdue baseball. Thanks so much, Tom.
Thank you.
Back to our Saturday simulcast. As promised, Kyle Charters joins us. Kyle does a much better job hosting than I do, but he's going to answer questions right now. So that part's good. Talking Purdue baseball, something we don't talk a lot on goldenblack.com, but a lot of interest, obviously, in where the way the Purdue baseball team has played of late, 24-13 overall and playing well. And always, you know, I'm always interested in our site, too. A lot of folks that are interested in what's going on. So, Kyle, nobody knows it better than you. And obviously, with the podcast you do with Greg Goff and with Ben Turner's always informative. But give us a little bit of update of where they are. I know they got a weekend series with East Tennessee State before they return to Big Ten play. But this is a team that's is making a mark in the league so far.
Yeah, certainly so. What, 23-14? I think that's the record headed to this weekend.
24-13. I can't remember.
24-13. Yeah, that might be right.
8-4 in the league.
Yeah, 8-4 in the Big Ten, having won 7 in a row in conference play. Yeah, they've been on an impressive streak, winning 8 of their last 9, really just hammering the baseball. There was a period right before this sort of winning streak that Purdue was losing some close games, and they found a way to turn that around in the Rutgers series by winning 3 games in a row by 2 runs each, and then just absolutely hammering Michigan State. I mean, I don't think we really saw that coming. 42-3 in 3 games, football scores.
Yeah,
on spring football Saturday, 14-0 against Michigan State, and then 21-1 on Sunday. And then 13-3 in the midweek game this week against a good Ball State team, a Cardinal team that's been really good for a long time in the MAC. And they're hitting the ball, and they're doing it really not quite at full strength, but they've got enough in the lineup with a little bit of depth too that this is by far Greg Goff's best team, in his 5 seasons. Should at 8-4, I mean, you're trending toward not only being back in the Big Ten tournament, but maybe being back in the Big Ten tournament as a top 4 seed, maybe putting yourself in a position that you could go win the thing. There's nobody really in the Big Ten, I don't think, who has separated itself from the rest of the pack. And so, you know, Purdue's right there. It's been really, really fun to watch.
You know, you look at the situation and the Big Ten teams come at you fast. I mean, in terms of looking at that schedule now, as we get closer to the end, we're not to the end of the academic year, but you're getting there. But talk about some of the teams they've got to play down the stretch and what it is, in fact, going to take, in your view, to make that Big Ten tournament. And maybe you mentioned off air that the NCAA tournament is not out of the question for this team.
Yeah, I mean, I think to make the Big Ten tournament, typically you just need to finish 500 in the league. The top 8 of the 13 teams make it. I would think that Purdue would be able to get to 12-12, being 8-4, with the second half of the season coming up after the bye this weekend against ETSU. You start out with Northwestern on Friday night, Northwestern at Wrigley Field, which will be fun.
Which will be fun. And you're going to do that game, I assume.
I will be there. Yeah, that'll be a good time. We've played at professional parks, AAA parks, and then we've played before at Target Field. We played at the new Viking Stadium, which is a little bit different. We played in the Dome way back in the day. But this will be, its own sort of treat, especially for a longtime Cubs fan like myself. Northwestern, Indiana, at Michigan, wrap up with Illinois. So those last 3 weekends, Indiana, Michigan, and Illinois, are going to be 3 big weekends. I mean, if Purdue could find it seems unreasonable to think Purdue could go 8-4 again, but I would have told you when Purdue was 1-4 that it would have been highly unreasonable for Purdue to be 8-4 in the first half as well. But if you could go, 7-5, heck, if you could even go 6-6, in the second half, you would be almost certainly a top 4, maybe top 5 seed at worst in the Big Ten tournament. But yeah, you've put yourself, I mean, your RPI, depending on who you look at, is in the 60s. You're probably not in the field of 64 right now. And it might take a lot. I mean, unfortunately, the Big Ten RPI as a whole is not going to help you. But there are some RPI gains you can make. The game next week at UIC will be a big game. You know, the series against Indiana, Michigan, and Illinois will be big series. Of course, you want to take care of business against Northwestern. But if you do all those things, and then you can win a couple of games in the Big Ten tournament, you know, maybe you can be at least in the conversation come Selection Sunday for the NCAA tournament. And that would be, I mean, that would be huge. You wouldn't have necessarily predicted that before the season started.
Yeah, you get a chance to go to Northwestern. Hey, if you, and I can't remember now, will that be your first appearance in the Wrigley Field press box in your professional?
Yeah, I have career? Never. Yeah, I mean, I've never been up in the press box. I'm not sure where they will put us exactly. I mean, I'm sure there's obviously the home press box and you know, road and maybe some auxiliary places too. I would imagine sometimes the major league teams get a little, as you might imagine, get a little protective of their stuff when you're visiting like that, which is understandable. I mean, it's their facility, but we'll see. And you know, usually they're protective, but also very welcoming. So it should be a great experience.
Yeah, it was a fun experience a couple of years ago. We were up there for football, and obviously this baseball season was over at that point, but so it made it a little bit easier. But fun facility, and yeah, as if someone that's grown up watching the Cubs as well, it was exciting just to be able to do. But to be able to broadcast a game from there would be awesome for you. All right, some of the personnel, and obviously the names to know. Luke Gaffney's been hitting off the charts as a redshirt freshman. Talk about him, but also that some of the other guys that, you know, when fans go out to watch him play or listen to you on the radio or watch him when they get that opportunity, guys to look for in terms of guys that are really making a difference in this team.
Well, you said it, Luke Gaffney. I mean, maybe I was ignorant, but I had no idea that Luke Gaffney was going to be this good. I mean, he redshirted a year ago. Now he needed to get bigger and stronger and you know, just wasn't ready as a true freshman to be able to contribute. But he is a dude who you love to watch because he goes up there with one thing in mind, and that is to hit the baseball. Like, he is, I mean, he's up there, it looks like he's taking an axe to the baseball. It really does. I mean, he's just trying to hammer it into left field somewhere, gap it. But he's been great, hitting over 400 this far into the season. Slugging is 6-something.
Yeah.
And he's been fantastic. Did not very, very big competitor. And that kind of stuff rubs off, right? I mean, he's the kind of competitor that, like, Kevin Plawecki was.
Yeah.
Cameron Perkins and those guys in 2012. I mean, it's the same kind of, you know, go out there and give it everything you possibly have. He's a smart dude, a mechanical engineer. So he's at Purdue for an academic reason, but can also play baseball. So he's been great. Connor Cascanet, Canadian, you know, been around the program for a couple of years. Catcher, another very consistent guy in the middle of the order who's made so much improvement behind the plate. I mean, it's pretty remarkable to look at him now from, you know, at the beginning of the season last year. They've got a couple of Australians, Joe Stevens playing third base, who is a, if he's not a major league level third baseman defensively, he's, you know, a triple A, but he might be a big league level defensive third baseman who has great instincts, and he's hitting about as well as you could hope this season. You know, he's really made some improvements there. And the other Australian, Keenan Spence, I mean, you want to talk about a dude you want getting off the bus first. I mean, he's 6'5", 230-pound right fielder.
Yeah, big kid.
He does not wear batting gloves. When he's at the plate, it literally looks like he's swinging a toothpick. But I think he's got some, you know, he was raw when he came to Purdue, and he's made a, you know, watching him early on with the curveball, you were like, this is not going to go very well. But he has made a lot of improvements, and I wouldn't say he's a plus curveball hitter, but he can hang in there now. And, you know, sometimes that's all you need to do, right? If you can hang in there and then get the pitch that you want to hit, because when he gets the pitch he wants to hit, he can hit it hard. I mean, he's had some velo, exit velos this year at 105, 107 miles an hour, which is big league exit velo. The ball just zings off his bat. You know, and then there's been a couple of other guys that are you know, the mainstays in the lineup, like Mike Bolton Jr., the Purdue's career steals leader, who's been around for a long time. Cooper Kornblum, you know, who's been an everyday starter now for 2 years. You know, so it's been good. And then the pitching has been solid. I think this is probably, it might be in my 20 years, this might be the most depth they've had. Now, maybe they don't have that, like, absolutely number one guy. But Jordan Morales has been good in that number one spot. He's winning games. Luke Wagner, the Morales transfer from Penn State. Wagner is a transfer from Georgia. Those two guys have been solid. And then just more depth. I mean, they've got four or five guys in the bullpen they can really count on, which is a lot. You know, if you have three guys you can count on the bullpen in college, you're doing pretty well. But to have four or five guys who you feel like you can put out there in a tight spot and get outs, that's pretty huge. And that's really what has been a couple of those guys like Carter Dorn and Avery Cook, who maybe weren't on the radar for those type of roles, who have played those type of roles, like big inning relievers. That has been huge. You can argue that those two guys have been, you know, Purdue's MVPs.
When you look at the wonderful world of the transfer portal, and obviously baseball is interesting because of the dynamic of guys' opportunity to go pro and all that. But and Purdue's gotten, you said a couple guys that have made a huge difference on their roster in terms of that. But what is the dynamic like that? To maybe inform folks about how that works. The NIL world, to some extent, I suppose, is can be a factor, I suppose. But tell me a little bit about that.
The NIL world is certainly a factor in the South. You know, that's, I mean, it is. You know, SEC baseball is huge. And so, you know, if you're a Northern team, you're competing against that. And, you know, just the NIL market for the Big Ten and for Northern teams is just not going to be as much. But they're the NIL is active in the South for sure. But yeah, I don't know how, even before open transfer, I don't know how baseball coaches did this with 11.7 scholarships, with the draft. I mean, you know, you've spent years recruiting players in high school, and then all of a sudden they get drafted in the top 10 rounds, and then they just never play for it. Like, you know, I mean, it's happened to Purdue, it's happened elsewhere, and then, you know, now you just have guys transfer. And so Purdue had 20 something newcomers this year. And that's not anything that Purdue's doing wrong. It's just the nature of college sports. And I wouldn't be surprised if, because of attrition and graduation and the draft, that Purdue has another 15 or 20 new guys next year. It has to make it incredibly difficult. Now, you know, Purdue was stung by a big transfer in the offseason. I think it was unexpected. Now, it probably used that money to go out and get another guy who's contributing big right now. I don't know if you can say, like, things are one for one trades, right? Like, one guy leaves, so you have the money to go get another guy. But I think you could probably look at it somewhat like that. And so you're stung by losses, but then you just have to go out there and you can't give up. Go out there and get somebody else. And I think Greg Goff this year did a good job with that, going out and getting the right pieces. And, you know, Purdue's new pitching coach, I think, has made a big difference. Josh Newman came in from Penn State, and I think that has been huge for Purdue. He's done a really good job, like I said, with the pitching staff. You know, Avery Cook was a guy who was, you know, Tommy John maybe 3 or 4 years ago, never came back as the same guy. Now he's throwing sidearm. It was just a suggestion by Josh Newman in the offseason. Hey, let's try this to see if we can get it back. And now he goes up there in the seventh, eighth innings, ninth innings sometimes of one run, two run games, and, you know, throws sweepers by right-handers and is just pretty impressive. So you got to go out and get guys when you lose guys. And Purdue was able to do that this year. And it's worked.
Yeah. All right, so the series are go to the Northwestern. You have Indiana comes to West Lafayette. Yeah. Go to Michigan and Illinois coming in as well for the last four series. Maybe you'll also – you had some decent weather, but it would be nice to have a last weekend good weather, but the hopes that you can have some good early May days and in Alexander Field for the Boilermakers as we go on that, and look forward to down the stretch. I don't know, and I know you're concerned on the radio side. Does Purdue have any BTN games coming up to your knowledge? I need those to look better.
Oh man, I don't even pay. I probably should pay more attention to that.
It's a one day at a time job, right? And that's probably the best.
Well, the Northwestern game is on the Friday night game, and Wrigley is on BTN.
$15 to go, and my son, who happens to live in the South Loop, unfortunately, is going to be out of town. But he said a lot of his friends are going to go. I'm going to guess that you're going to have a really good crowd. What a great venue, and hopefully, you're not getting a 47 degree raw night there, but you probably won't. It's balmy in the north side.
Yeah, it can be.
All right, Kyle, thanks so much. Always interesting. And if you get a chance, talk about your podcast. You drop that what day of the week typically?
I believe it's usually around noon on Wednesdays that it comes out. Do a really good preview with Greg Goff. As you mentioned, Ben Turner was the SID. We usually have a player spotlight in there. I think this week it's Mike Bolton Jr., who got hit 7 times in the series last week, including on Sunday. He had 7 plate appearances. He reached base all 7 times and got hit 4 times in the game on Sunday. So he was the proper guest, I think, and a Chicago guy. Went to Brother Rice. He's a Southside Sox guy. Brother Rice High School, but even he, as he says in the podcast this week, is excited about playing at Wrigley.
It's hard for those Sox guys to do that. I know to admit that, but you're not going to find a better venue in sports than Wrigley Field, and to do baseball would be cool. So we'll look for that next week. And obviously the Boilermakers, some big Ten games coming up down the stretch. We'll look for that. All right, I want to thank the Union Club Hotel for this another scintillating version of Saturday Simulcast. Tom Dienhart joined us in Seg 1, and we appreciate that as well. And Kyle, thanks again. We'll look forward to listening and watching your work down the road, and always appreciate your many contributions over the years to Golden Black. Thanks so much.